Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at viking.com.
From the Wall Street Journal, this is Instant Message. I'm David Pierce. This week on the show, we're going to talk about Facebook, because apparently we cannot stop talking about Facebook. Katie Binley, a reporter on our team, went through a truly wild experiment that, sitting next to her, I got to listen to a lot of, to see what she could do to affect the ads that she saw. So we'll get to that in a minute. I'm also going to be chatting with Frank Yang, the CEO of Simple Human, about the state of the smart home and why he's obsessed with $250 talking trash cans. First up, though, more Facebook. This week, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg wrote a big blog post about privacy, encryption, and the future of Facebook. There's a lot to unpack there. So here to help me do so, Christopher Mims in Baltimore and Joanna Stern in New York. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
We're starting late, so we have to talk extremely fast to get through everything, because that's, I think, how
let's do the Micro Machines guy thing.
But to the people that are listening, off. They don't know when we started this. We could have started we would have needed 65 minutes before this airs.
Wow. Tanya is very good at editing this show, so you're not wrong. Have you guys read this blog post? So it's a 3,200 word, sort of vague but sort of useful opus from Mark Zuckerberg on privacy and Facebook. Have you guys read it?
Every word.
We're going to do a live reading now. That's why we're here.
Yeah, we have Morgan Freeman here to read.
This is a special episode today where we read for, how long do you think it would take to read this all? How many words is it?
3,200 words. It'd be
can we get guy? In a time when privacy was under threat.
Keep going. This is great. You've already done it. Go on. This is the movie version.
A lone warrior named Mark Zuckerberg.
The Social Network 2. Christopher, you've been reporting and writing about this. So can you, what's the 30-second version of this 3,200-word blog post?
This really, it's weird. It felt like an internal memo to his team. Reading it, I just kept thinking, who is the audience? And I think it is him just signaling publicly all the Facebook staff that they need to go make Facebook feel private now. So the 30-second version is they had a bunch of scandals. Nobody trusts them anymore, or some people don't trust them anymore, and they want to regain that trust.
Okay. And so the thing that struck me was, it seems like he's less talking about Facebook as it exists now, that will continue to exist. My first reading of it was, we are changing Facebook entirely. And I realized that's not actually what he's talking about. Facebook and Instagram will sort of continue to be as they are. But he's talking about wanting to build this whole other thing, a more private, small group social networking experience. Is that your read of it too?
Yes, there is a very vague line in there about how we need to rethink sort of all of the whole platform in a privacy way, but it was so non-specific that I felt like he was just sort of leaving the door open to the possibility of someday changing the main Facebook product and the newsfeed. But that definitely wasn't his emphasis. He said WhatsApp 14 times in this 3,200 word memo. He said payments 4 times. So his focus is clearly on creating this end-to-end encrypted messaging service like WeChat in China or like iMessage in the US, which I think he really, at one point he said this really odd thing in an interview with Wired editor-in-chief Nick Thompson, which was, we are not the number one messaging app in the US. And then I went and looked it up and it's yes, you are. Facebook Messenger, number one messaging app in the US, according to, multiple services. Number two, WhatsApp. What's he talking about? I think he's talking about iMessage, which of course is an app in its own right, but because I think analysts view it as, just an SMS alternative sort of, it doesn't get included in these indexes of top messaging apps. So I think he is really gunning for Apple on this. He said payments a bunch. And so I think that he sees Apple Pay. He sees what WeChat has become, this whole interface for your entire life in China. And he wants to, I think, in some ways copy that, make the American version of that, get us trusting Facebook again so that we're all on this same unified, unitary messaging platform. And eventually it's how we are connecting with individuals, connecting with businesses, paying each other. So I think that's the direction he's pushing. So it's really, once again, more Facebook and not less.
I also, by the way, when you were saying that, I did a search for how many times he said SMS in here. And because I'm using this on my iPhone, I think it's 3 or 4. And is in your research, did you find that SMS is actually still the number one messaging platform?
I don't know. I didn't look. I just know
I wonder
that,
if that's, I mean, in the U.S., yeah. if that might be what he's referring to.
You're right. It could be that he's just talking about SMS itself. You're right about that.
Which to me signals, like you said, some sort of assault on Apple and iMessage, more Facebook, more ways to connect the private messaging between iPhones, Android phones, and whatever other devices we're going to be using in the future in this private social network world.
Apple's best response to this would be to release an iMessage app for Android.
I mean, it would be the ultimate FU from Tim, sorry, from Tim Apple today, you know? Tim Apple.
Honestly, after this, I feel like if Facebook gained any traction, Apple might actually do that.
Right. I mean, Tim Apple has already said he doesn't like Mark Facebook. And he's, you know, he's made some quite public statements about how he views the world. Why not? I mean, and that's really right. Like, because it just seemed to describe a lot of products that are out there already. And it was like,
yes.
Facebook, you want to make Snapchat? Okay, great. You already made Snapchat and it's like different and it's for Instagram. Oh, you want to make messaging, text messaging? Great. All these other companies want to do better text messaging. Guess what? iMessage is the most used app on most iPhones. What is the other things he talks about? I don't know, like WeChat, everything seems to be out there.
He talks about small groups, sharing in small groups, which obviously they see a lot of that overseas. So I talked to a friend of mine who has a lot of insight about how WhatsApp, for example, is used all around the world and especially in India. And it's funny, you know, like the Indian government in some ways is sort of preventing Facebook from becoming a payments platform there. But like if they got out of the way, they could be number one in India tomorrow. Like they could be the WeChat of India, like the combined messaging and payments platform. You know, mm-hmm. WhatsApp is just this absolute force of nature outside the US, bigger than Facebook even. So no wonder he wants to double down on it.
Well, that was the weird thing to me, right? Is like I read this whole thing and there's this one line where he says, Zuck writes that today we already see that private messaging, ephemeral stories, and small groups are by far the fastest growing areas of online communication. Which is like, yeah, dude, that's what you spent $21 billion on WhatsApp for. And like I got through the end of this whole thing and basically all he seems to say is WhatsApp is really good. We're going to double down on that, which is fine and great. But then the big product thing was that they're going to try to unify the Instagram, WhatsApp, and Facebook systems so that you can chat with all the same people in all the same places. And it becomes this like one big back-end encrypted platform, which I'm sure for every Facebook engineer is just an absolute nightmare of a task. But I got to the end of this and it's like, you're just describing WhatsApp, just better
right.
WhatsApp.
I felt
which
the same
is fine.
Way.
Seems good. I like WhatsApp, fine. But a lot of the same things that A, because it's encrypted, it's harder to know what's going on and harder to do things like stop viral misinformation as it's shared around. It's harder to figure out how to make money off of it. It's harder to figure out how to sell ads against it, which is why I think like this payments thing is a really big deal because very clearly the goal is whatever ads can't do. And Facebook seems to think that they can still figure out how to sell a lot of ads against this stuff, but that being part of commerce can pick up a lot of that slack. And I mean, there is a lot of evidence that that's true, but I feel like most of that evidence is just WeChat. And I don't know how many more WeChats we're going to have in the world.
And I was actually going to also bring up, I think Slack is also a big aim here. One thing that I find is like there are now a lot of these mom groups that actually use Slack and don't, there are mom and I shouldn't just say mom. There are parenting groups on Facebook that are very, very popular, but they're like big, big groups. But then Slack, there's a lot of these smaller mom or parent groups where people really engage and chat about certain things. And it's always struck me like, why aren't they just on Facebook Messenger? But for some reason, like Slack has become this big sort of private messaging community for smaller communities. And I feel like that's kind of, again, what he's describing in this, which is like, you're going to find these shared communities and that's the future. And turns out actually like that's what's happening right now. They're just not playing as big, if not only for WhatsApp. I mean, WhatsApp is clearly one of the leaders.
Well, I think it gets back to the trust issue, right? Like why move that to Slack? I mean, if you're sophisticated enough to move your parenting group to Slack, I would argue that you're sensitive to all the coverage about Facebook scandals, which obviously the majority of its users are not.
Yeah, I've never asked like, why are you guys here on Slack? I'm going to go do that. I'll be back.
I like it. Katie Binley, a reporter on our little personal technology team, has written a couple of pieces over the last week or so about crazy experiments she had with Facebook ads. So she learned a lot about how the ad world works and probably ruined her own ads forever now that I think about it. But anyway, I don't even like want to spoil the crazy stuff that she's gone through. So I'm just going to go get Katie. I'll be right back.
We're going to do a live reading. You should pick your favorite passage and I'm going to pick my favorite passage.
Oh my God. In the beginning, there was the water, and then I made
Facebook,
and then the internet existed.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, David.
We were talking about all the ways that Facebook collects data about you that isn't just the content of messages. Mm-hmm. And this has like been your life for the last month or so. So like, just tell us what you've been doing.
So it all started when I was walking around, popping in and out of some stores on Fillmore Street, and I went into one of them, and the next day I got an ad for that store in my Instagram feed. And it's not a place I'd ever bought anything, and so I was like, well, they don't have my email address. Like, how did they know I was there? And I was like, wait a second, I got to check my location settings, and I checked, and sure enough, I have them turned off for Instagram.
Did you go straight to the mic is recording me conspiracy theory that...
This one felt
so
much
crazy.
More like they're tracking where I like they somehow have access to my location when I've thought that I've denied it. That was sort of my immediate thought. But I think about the microphone all the time, obviously. that sort of was the first like trigger for this. And then I kept noticing other ones like I've got this tool that's supposed to it's a Facebook privacy tool that's supposed to make it so you don't see ads tied to like your browsing history because it blocks them from showing you ads tied to Pixel. And then I'd been researching a story and going to this one company's website, and then I started getting ads for them a ton in my Instagram feed. And so I just got this idea, like, wait a second. They've, you know, given us these measures we can take to not see ads tied to certain types of behavior. So why do I still feel like I see them all the time? And thus began like asking them a ton and ton of questions about why these things were happening.
Because Facebook's stance has always basically been, you have lots of control over these kinds of things.
Yes. And not only
like we've known is not true for a pretty long time, but
right.
It's what they keep saying.
Right. I feel like it's kind of the illusion of control as that's actually a researcher I interviewed wrote like a Medium piece that uses that phrase, you know, this illusion of control, because if you look at the, you know, the settings for location, it'll tell you like, oh, you know, it stops you from sending us your precise location. And the word precise is doing a lot of work there because they are, you know, able to infer it from other signals like IP address and things like that, which is not, you know, it's not going to get down to like they know the exact coordinates of where I am. But they have a very good idea, I would say, based on what I learned.
Yeah. So what was you went through a bunch of like specific experiments to see how you could affect your ads.
Yeah.
What were the craziest ones you went through?
Well, so it started basically with just looking up random stuff that I felt like I shouldn't be in the target demographic of. So I spent a lot of time Googling like men's golf clubs. Urns was one of them.
Cool.
Like I'm in the market for an urn. Let's see if I can make Facebook think that. I'm trying to think if there were... And then I started being like, all right, wait, pregnancy is a pretty good one because like... Even though I'm 37, but I'm single, like I don't usually see pregnancy ads, and I've actually taken a lot of steps to not see them. So I had like blocked parenting or hidden parenting as an ad topic, and I had removed child as an interest, and that had been working. Like I didn't see ads tied to pregnancy or anything maternity related. And initially, just my browsing history didn't result in seeing any ads related to that. And then I was like, I wonder what would happen if I downloaded an app. And Joanna actually, when in her piece from last year, wrote about, I forget if you downloaded like a some kind of app that had
weight
to do
loss.
With being
yeah.
healthy. Right.
Oh,
and
no,
then
sorry.
You started
it wasn't
seeing,
weight loss. It's just tracking your food, which was
yeah, tracking
loss.
Your food. And then you started seeing related ads. And so I was like, all right, let's see what happens if I download the What to Expect app. Like, I've got all these other measures in place to not see this stuff that's, you know, based on my offline behavior or my off Facebook behavior rather. And I downloaded the app and just kind of kept an eye on my Instagram feed. And, you know, with 11 hours almost on the dot, I got an ad for Hatch Gal. And there's like this, you know, very happy woman sitting in kind of like a boho chic maternity dress. And she's got her hand resting on her, you know, swollen belly. And it was like, oh, hey, mama, you know, like need to get our 30% off deal or whatever it was. And I was like, okay, there we go. We got one. So that's what happened.
And you had, for that step, you had also turned off something in iOS, right? You turned off the
yes,
limit ad
yes.
tracking.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. I forgot about that. Yeah, so what that's supposed to do is, you know, make my mobile advertising ID unavailable to developers. Because if I hadn't done that, it would have been like a very easy connection to draw. It would have been like, all right, well, you know, they've got my mobile advertising ID and then Facebook got that. But in this case, I had that supposedly blocked. So thus began this, you know, sort of investigation into why I saw that ad, which was... It was an unsatisfying investigation in the sense of there was not, I did not feel like people were eager to help me figure this out. And you'll see a lot of people who, you know, work in digital advertising be like, you know, relevant ads are good for you and blah, blah, blah. This is what customers want. And I'm like, okay, well, if that's the case, like, why are all of you so cagey in telling me, like, what the criteria were that, you know, that were used to send me this? And I mean, ultimately, Facebook looked into it for me, which was nice of them. And they told me that I was targeted because I was in a lookalike audience, which I've realized that is both of the ads that I looked in that I had them look into for me. I was in a, quote, lookalike audience for.
Which, when they say lookalike audiences, they mean like women 18 to 54. It's so hard to talk about this stuff, I feel like, without either feeling like you're talking about a conspiracy theory.
Yes.
Or... not, it just doesn't seem like there are, like, if someone at Facebook who is helping you knows the answer, they're not going to tell you.
Your kicker, which is like, must have been a coincidence, yeah, right, is so good because, like, that's what we've been hearing, basically. Like, right. You know, must have been a coincidence you were talking about this thing. Okay, I did a lot of reporting on the mic thing last year, and I do not feel confident that they are listening to our mic. I think it would be much harder to parse mic or audio information than all of the other information that you detail so well, Katie, in the piece that they have. So, like, you often hear from either the companies or from Facebook, it's a coincidence that you bought X, Y, and Z, and then we got you this. Or it's a coincidence that you downloaded this thing and you got this. Like, there are too many other signals tying these things together that it should it be a coincidence.
Well, the other thing that I think is, you know, the other thing I saw a lot of people replying to when I posted my story on Twitter were, you know, people saying like, it's the frequency illusion, or I forget if it's frequency or recency illusion or whatever. There's some like syndrome that comes with it. And I am like completely, you know, willing to acknowledge that there are times when I was talking about something and I saw an ad for it and I probably noticed the ad because I was just talking about it.
Whereas you don't notice the million other ads that are relevant.
Right. But so that explains some of these things. But this is sort of why the pregnancy one is so perfect, because I would have noticed pregnancy ads because I don't see them and because, like, you know, it's just that's the kind of thing that I just know I would notice because I'd be like, I don't really want to see like this kind of thing right now at this stage of my life or whatever.
I don't buy the illusion thing, by the way. Like, that was the same argument last year when the mic thing was happening and everyone was saying it. It was like, yeah, but there are too many of these ads that I'm seeing that are really relevant and are based on things that I did. So, like, yes, I'm seeing them, and maybe because I, like, heard that thing, I'm more paying attention to this ad. But then I also, like, even over the last year, just notice how many ads in my feed now are relevant. Like, I am very – and we were talking about this last week. Like, there are many ads in my feed where I'm like, that's interesting, or that's interesting. And someone actually that works on our video team, she was like, I buy things all the time on Instagram based on ads. They know me so well.
If you believe Facebook that all of this is true and that data is not being collected because you walked into the store, right? That it's like, if you know enough of the details around what I'm doing and who else is doing those things, and like, you can gather all this data without knowing the specifics about where I'm standing at any given point. And like, Joanna, your headline on that story last fall was something like, Facebook isn't spying on your mic because it doesn't need to. And I think that's true. And I think, like, even as Facebook wants to talk more and more about privacy and encryption, like, the part of me that thinks all of this is sort of a delightful ruse to give Facebook a PR win thinks that, like, maybe Facebook doesn't need to read my messages to keep selling me these incredibly good ads.
If Facebook can track us in this way, the question that always comes up is, well, how else can this data be used? How does it get out? Who else can track us like this, right? Like, so Facebook just wants to target us with ads, but, you know, can people on our enemies list, which I know we all have, someday track us this way, or can like governments track us this way? That sense of unease, like, wow, I really am carrying a tracking device around in my pocket, and this seems innocent enough now, but will it always be this innocent?
Yeah. So, and square all of this for me, Mims, with the memo that Zuck wrote. What do you, like, what changes here? Does anything have to change, or is Facebook just going to yell encryption every time you say anything until everybody trusts them again?
I mean, I feel like Katie's piece was the best illustration ever of the fact, and also, you know, other reporting by our colleagues about how Facebook is getting data from sensitive data, like your where you are in your cycle, if you're a woman, from apps that track that. It's the best illustration ever that, you know, Facebook doesn't need to look at the contents of our messages to determine all this stuff about us, right? Like, there's tons of sensitive data being thrown off all the time. And again, the most sensitive data about any of us is who we're connected to, where we live, where we go, what time of day we do things. All those can continue to be tracked by any app that's on our phones if we give them the permission. And if we don't give them the permission, there's probably some other app tracking it. And then that data gets sold on and recombined inside Facebook's ad engine. That's the most important thing to understand about that engine, is it can ingest any kind of data. And then you can do any kind of correlation you want, whether it's are you pregnant or are you standing next to a friend who just looked at this particular dress.
Should we feel encouraged at all about the idea that Facebook might start to get rid of our data over time? Like, the, I think he said something about deleting messages by default after a month or a year or something, and stories being the default, and the idea that a more private Facebook means your stuff goes away more quickly. Is that, do we care about that? I can't decide if that means anything or not.
Oh, yeah, by the way, that was the other point.
Governments ask them for that data, and if they can tell them that they just don't have it, then they're in a stronger position. So that could be good.
Yeah, I mean, actually, that was another example. I think we should, like, read the whole memo and mark up, like, all the other products that he's basically referring to, because when I read that part, I was like, oh, so Signal, right? Like, Signal has become really popular now as an anti-Facebook, anti-privacy, or, you know, anti-privacy messaging apps or social networks. And, like, just adding those features to their current platform, to me, does not seem like innovation or the things to save them. But maybe, I don't, you know, maybe people will see it differently.
Like, one thing I keep thinking, or have been thinking about since we saw this post, is, like, how long do they really need to keep the data in order to get what they want from it? Like, I don't know. Is it kind of just doing them a favor by being like, sweet, we don't have to save all these a year from now? That's true. It's sort of like captured at the moment.
Yeah, once you've checked the box in my profile, do you need it anymore?
Right, right. And I don't know enough about the, like, deep inside, like, the black box of how their algorithms work or whatever. But I remember when I did a story referencing this Clear History tool we've been waiting for however long, someone sent me
decades.
A note being like, you know, I don't think they really need to keep this stuff in order for them to, like, you know, learn more about us and still, you know, make use of it.
Right. Yeah.
And it's probably better, actually, that they don't.
Well, I've talked to other companies who do this kind of targeting in a different way for safety and security. They don't keep data. It's totally event driven. They look at your behavior in the moment on an app or on a service in order to determine who you are and if you're trustworthy. So, you know, frankly, one of the companies doing this is Airbnb. If Airbnb can determine whether or not you are a safe person to rent an apartment or rent one from somebody else, you know, I think Facebook can do it from the same kind of in the moment event driven data rather than having in much history about you.
Right. And the back end systems haven't been smart enough anyway to, like, you know, Katie got a pregnancy ad now. I don't think it's smart enough to know that maybe it then files into, like, future parents, but, like, in 9 months, she's going to want to have newborn outfits marketed to her, right? Like, that would be.
And it doesn't need that, because in 9 months she'll be downloading
for it.
The appropriate
exactly.
app or looking at the appropriate website. They don't need to know, you know, they don't need that.
Yeah, congratulations, by the way, Katie.
Thank you so much. My fake baby is due August 16th, which is my mother's birthday. And since I haven't given her any grandchildren yet, I thought I could give her a fake one.
So excited.
Follow an Instagram account of your text with your mom, I feel.
But only if it's encrypted. All right, we should move on. Katie, thank you.
Thank you. Good chatting, guys.
Okay, coming up in just a second, my interview with Frank Yang on why smart home gadgets suck and how we can make them better. But first, Mims, you claim you have solved autocorrect, finally. So tell the people.
If you want a word to stop being misinterpreted by Siri, just add that word to your contacts list, your little contacts app on your iPhone. So if you are flustered by Siri correcting the F word as duck or ducked, just add a contact named F word, the word we cannot say on this family friendly podcast. If it's you're fart. Not that
That's
sort, just so you know, you can also do this with like your kids' names. Like I had problems with Siri. Like I couldn't understand. I was like, this is the worst design ever. I've said my eldest child's name 1,000 times. She never gets it right. Put it in your contacts list. Overnight, she'll start getting it.
Wait, so you're talking about autocorrect, but also Siri knowing the name? Like what is Siri? Yep.
Once Siri knows the name and the autocorrect, those are linked.
Got it.
Whoa. So it's like once it sees the word written as it should be in your contacts list, it realizes, oh, that's what he's been saying all this time.
Yeah, it thinks it's a proper noun. And that's why, by the way, like you can tell it like, hey, you know, call so-and-so. And you're like, well, that's a weird name that it just got. It's because it's in your contacts list.
See, I don't get it. That's I don't get it auto-correcting me anymore because I say it so much or I type it so much. Why can't we say the word?
It just learned you want to swear.
Yeah, it knows that I want to. Say, it knows that I never want to say duck, and I always want to.
I just
say
like has anyone
other
ever
word.
Wanted to say what the duck in a text message?
Right.
Like, has that ever been on purpose? Drives me insane.
Yeah. Or ducking. I never say duck.
Cluster duck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cluster duck. What
cluster
is
duck isn't
at the
even
park
a word.
The other day, you and can then, also put it into the like autocorrect the keyboard function, the keyboard shortcuts. That might also be a good solution for people. That's what I'm going to do. Anytime I accidentally type duck. It's going to autocorrect to the other word.
But that's the problem is, would it go the other way? If you typed it correctly, would it still make it duck? I think this is why you need it in your contacts.
I'm putting it in both.
I think the real problem is, it's just bizarre to me that Apple does not expose Siri's and the autocorrect dictionary in any way. Like, this is such a weird workaround. Like, I really Googled on this. I was like, oh, surely there's some setting I can change. Nope.
Does it capitalize it now?
It would if I had capitalized it in my contact, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Lowercase.
And
go
you know what?
Type
if you
every
listen,
swear word you know.
If you listen to this podcast, if you've listened this far in this podcast and you follow us on Twitter, send us screenshots of how you're changing this
in
your contacts.
Yes, please.
Yeah. All right. For now, we should move on. And coming up next, we're going to talk about fancy trash cans.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Welcome back. Here's a question. Would you pay $250 for a trash can? What about $80 for a soap dispenser? Frank Yang, the CEO of a company called Simple Human, thinks you might, and he's actually sold a lot of them. Frank's whole goal is to take these everyday objects, the things you just never really want to think about, and make them better. Simple Human's been doing this for years, decades, but more recently the company's starting to think about the smart home. It's integrating Alexa and Google Assistant, connecting your devices to each other, that sort of thing. The company's most recent product is a mirror. It has a light that automatically comes on when you get close, but it also has a speaker inside and Google Assistant and can do lots more than just show you your own face. We're at a funny place in the smart home era. Lots of things are connected, lots of things are smart, but it's all kind of confusing and it seems like nothing works the way it should yet. Our homes aren't smart, really. We just have more gadgets now. So I wanted to know what Frank, the guy who spent literally decades perfecting a trash can, thought about the state of the smart home. But I also wanted to know a little more about Frank himself. Like, for instance, why he would spend decades perfecting a trash can.
I'm one of those guys that, you know, around the house, I easily get bugged. Like, oh my God. You know, so I learned that when things are in order and they're all just working well, you just feel a lot more relaxed, calmer. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. They kind of block it out. I just try not to block it out.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. And I think this is true with a lot of technology right now, which is one thing I'm curious to get your thoughts about, where it seems like there are all these things that we sort of have learned how to do that aren't necessarily the right way or the most efficient way or the easiest way. But like we learned how to use our phones. And so we assume that that's the right way to use our phones, even though there's absolutely no evidence that the way we learn to use our phones or keyboards or computers or whatever is actually the right way. So getting people to sort of get out of the I know how to do this space and into like, how could this actually be better is a really interesting sort of exercise.
Totally agree.
It seems like over the course of the time you've been running Simple Human that technology sort of in its like computers, I guess, for lack of a better word, has started to factor much more into what you're doing. It's not only just about how do I make this better and simpler. You're trying to make these things smarter. Is that a different sort of equation than just like how do I make a trash can easier to use, but how do I put Alexa in a trash can in a way that's easier to use?
You know, we went from a big clunky computer, right, and now to a smartphone and probably to a smartwatch. You know, the technology getting smaller and smaller and more integrated. I think you should walk around the room and technology should present itself at the right time when you need it and do what you need without me being slaved to a phone to do it. Actually, for a while, when we designed that trash can to react to voice, at first we thought, oh, we could easily integrate to Alexa and say, or a phone and say, you know, hey, Alexa, open trash can. But we thought, well, why? That's just so slow and not intuitive. So we went directly to open can and had our own trigger word.
I would guess if you feel that way, that you look around and you see a lot of the sort of connected home products that are out there and they drive you kind of crazy. Is that true?
Yeah, it does. Because I feel like a lot of them, you're kind of doing it because the technology is there. But if you look around, how many connected home devices are really, really successful? I would argue the camera is successful, probably. But other than that, a lot of things out there, it doesn't feel like it's life-changing.
So I want to hear a little more about the kind of simple human process. And I don't know if there's a specific device that's the easiest. I mean, it seems like your newest thing is this mirror, so we could talk about that. But I'm really curious kind of what goes into the process of trying to redo one of these sort of everyday objects in the simple human way.
So first people say, why the mirror? And I said, because I'm looking at functional products that really people use a lot of. And we were first in the kitchen, and then we knew that people also spend a lot of time other than the kitchen in the bathroom. After a while, we thought, well, the mirror, everybody uses a mirror a lot of. But the problem was that it's a mirror. What can you do to it, right? So in the beginning, we would then go through a lot of research with industrial designers to kind of look at people's habits, you know, what mirrors are out there, and do a few phases of that. And then we would start to ideate like, well, maybe a mirror should have, at the time, like a clock in it, a dock for phone, you know, to play music, or scoping arm that comes at your face, and a little cubby in the back for your comb, a hair dryer. I mean, like just a lot of ideas, and all these ideas would have a different slant. Actually, we did that for like 8 months. That actually is the toughest part, is to figure out in which way is the right way to go. It was very tough for me because I was at a loss. So my team was getting frustrated. And then I was like taking a shower one morning. I was looking through the shower glass because foggy. And I looked through it and saw the mirror in my bathroom. And it was like not clear, obviously. And I thought, you know, man, the mirror is supposed to show you a really good view. And I said, well, our mirror has to provide the best view. So it sounded basic, but then after that, it just kind of started to move really fast because then we had to research, well, wait, what is a mirror? Is it like a clear glass with what? What's the backing? What gives you reflectivity? So we then went through all this R&D and looking at materials to understand the whole mirror, how to get the best view, which means you need good lighting. Then you had to go through what's good lighting, right? What consider the best, which is the sunlight. Go through all that, start showing this prototype to friends and family, and they would look at it for like 5 seconds and say, oh, looks great, thanks. And I said, wait, you didn't turn on the light. I said, well, no, that's fine. Don't worry, I don't need a light, because I realized people don't like to see themselves magnified usually. I said, wait, you know what? If the light's not on, I didn't guarantee the best view. You know what? I'm going to make it come on automatically. That's why I threw the sensor in there, because it satisfied our goal.
I like that. So at what point in that process do you start thinking about things like Alexa and how some of this other technology can be part of it?
We at first thought this is just a really functional tool that we call the vanity mirror for the bathroom, right? Then it started taking on makeup slant because the makeup world is so huge. Like, this is an awesome makeup mirror because the light is so good. Then it evolved into, well, makeup takes a long time for a lot of people. It's really a routine. So we start to visualize this as a routine that you go through. We know people love to have music and love to kind of listen to podcasts and news. And this is why we wanted to add the speaker. And this is also why we chose Google over Alexa, actually, because we knew Google had more of the routine aspect, because they have maps and calendar, and you can say, well, how's my day? So that's why we chose to integrate Google first into this product.
So as you look at sort of what's going on in the smart home and in this kind of everything is about to be connected universe, what pieces of that are most interesting to you? Like, where do you feel like the biggest opportunity for Simple Human is in terms of kind of the broader smart home universe?
Yeah, I actually don't know the answer. And we're still thinking and searching it ourselves. And I just know we keep looking at the wellness part of it. We don't have it identified. It's actually quite a difficult question to answer. I mean, we're even answering things. Like, for example, now you say, Alexa, hey, Google, right? To wake up. Couldn't I walk up to a microwave and just talk to it without saying Alexa or Google? Can I say microwave? Because it is a microwave.
Right.
Like, can I talk to microwave like it's the smart person, not like I'm talking to another smart person to help me operate it? What's in my head is there only going to be two assistants out there in the world or three? Or every device will be its own person eventually?
This is a conversation I've had with a lot of people over the last couple of years. And it's really interesting because I as best I can tell, it is basically 50-50, where there are people who are like, okay, you're not going to want to have to know what it is. You just say Google and let it handle it. And then other people who are like, no, you're talking to your microwave. Your microwave is not named Google. Your microwave is named microwave.
And maybe you don't have to say microwave because the microwave sees you. You go up there and just talk. I tend to agree with your direction. That's why we're very careful about like going too deep on the smart assistant route, you know, for sure.
Yeah. So do you think is the future for Simple Human for there to be this kind of smarts or some kind of smarts in all of your products? I mean, is there still a world in which you're just making better versions of things that don't need to be connected or smart?
There'll be both for sure. Because a lot of times it will be the technology. You know, like the moment you put smarts in it, well, it needs battery. You want to plug it in. You want to recharge it. So there'll be a line like just that smart for that product. It's just not deserving of the downsides, right? Like a paper towel holder. No, you know what? I could put a chip in there, plug it in. Seriously, do you want to have a cord on your on your kitchen countertop? But or if one day somebody invents something where it's like 5-year battery life, right? It could do all that. Then maybe, yeah. With today's technology, it's not that many products you can really apply yet, but it'll be more and more down the road as technology gets better.
Thanks to Frank, Katie, Christopher, and Joanna for being here. Thanks to Tanya, our producer, and thank you for listening. We have new episodes always on Fridays, so make sure you subscribe to Instant Message on whatever podcast app you use. If you use Castro, there's a new update. It's really cool, has some new discovery stuff. Big fan. As always, if you have feedback or ideas, email us at personaltech@wsj.com. We'll talk to you soon.